You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
There are so many places to go these days for investment advice. Lots of financial publications, a couple of 24-hour cable TV networks, and thousands of self-proclaimed financial gurus. So who can be blamed for feeling overwhelmed about having to make money decisions? Journalist Jason Zweig takes a look at the brain science behind how you make those investment choices in his new book called Your Money and Your Brain. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased it has brought him to my program today. Welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks, Leonard.
Is there really a scientific category called neuroeconomics?
Yes, there is. And as you might guess from the name, it's a combination, a blend of neuroscience, economics, with a heavy dose of psychology thrown in.
And when did this start?
Well, it started probably about 10 years ago, but it's really taken off in the last 5 years or so as, you know, the wonders of imaging technology have really allowed scientists to peer into the brain in real time as people are making financial decisions.
Why even do that? Is it because there's interest in how rational people are when they're making investment decisions or dealing with money?
There's a bunch of reasons. The government is interested in this kind of research because it helps us understand in new ways some profound psychological problems like addiction, which is essentially a desire for reward that won't give up. And depression, which in a way is a fear of risk that won't quit. And so the same polarities that drive a lot of investing behavior also drive a lot of psychological disturbances.
So when we see, when we look at the brains of people who are investing, we see the same sorts of things we see in people who are having other kinds of problems.
In fact, in some ways, the correspondence between people who have psychological trouble and people who have extreme financial behavior are really disturbing. And, you know, one clear example is if you take a brain scan of a narcotics addict who's expecting his next hit and you compare it with the brain of someone who's been engaged in an investing task inside the brain scanner and who has made a successful investment two or three times in a row, the two scans are indistinguishable. The investor has essentially become addicted to his own decisions.
Now, I always thought that I didn't get into investment because I worked in public broadcasting and never had enough money to invest. Now it turns out it's just because I'm kind of well-balanced mentally. Can I make that claim?
Well, there certainly is a fair amount of evidence that people with normal intact brains may have problems investing that people with brain damage may not experience. But it does depend on what your goals are.
In the past, I'm assuming traditional economists thought that anyone in the marketplace would behave rationally and based all of their thinking on that.
Yeah, I mean, the notion that human beings are rational is one of the central tenets of modern economics. Unfortunately, if you take the definition as economists have always assumed it, it's wrong. People are not rational in the economic definition.
And many people have pointed out that investing in the stock market is something like gambling. And in, from what I know from some bankers who have brokers as their clients, sometimes they have to work things out with Atlantic City casinos because they have dropped a bundle there. There are real connections there. Do we know what parts of the brain are actually involved in all of this?
Yes, we do. And maybe the basic way to think about it is that your brain has two systems. One is involved in logic and what an economist would call rationality and long-term planning and putting things in context.
The reflective brain.
The reflective brain. And the other, which in the book I call the reflexive brain, is very intuitive, emotional, and makes instantaneous decisions. And people who turn investing into gambling are almost certainly flying by the seat of their emotional pants. Now, investing need not resemble gambling at all. In fact, even though Wall Street is always likened to a casino, there's a big difference. If you are a patient, long-term investor who makes good decisions, instead of going to the casino and getting stripped, you can actually own the casino, which, as everyone knows, is the only way to make money in Las Vegas.
But you write that many of the overly reflective thinkers, you know, are actually terrible investors. I'm not talking about the ones who own the casinos, but the people who invest by really working things out. I guess that's almost like the guy who bets on the horses by doing a serious mathematical analysis.
Yeah, systems get people into trouble. You often hear professional investors or engineers who invest talk about their system for beating the market. And, of course, all the recent publicity about hedge funds and the turmoil they've caused in the markets and the way their models have broken down, the models they use to calculate values, is a reminder that these mathematical systems fail for two reasons. The first is that they can't take account of everything. There's almost an infinite number of variables that affect the stock market. The second problem is they always omit the emotions of the people who happen to be running the hedge fund. And once the model starts to break down, the emotional brain takes over and then everything goes haywire.
So does a successful investor rely in part on balancing the reflective and reflexive parts of the brain?
That's exactly what you need in order to succeed. And, you know, the key, I think, is not to try to turn your emotions off, because that's not practical. None of us is Mr. Spock. We can't just turn our emotions off. But you can learn to turn them inside out. And Warren Buffett, you know, the world's greatest living investor, often talks about how he seeks to be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when other people are greedy. And one reason he can do that is because he puts in place the conditions for his decisions years in advance. And he doesn't make decisions purely in response to what happens to the price, but rather how that relates to the value of the investments he's considering.
My guest is Jason Zweig, who's a senior writer for Money Magazine. He's been guest columnist for Time and CNN.com. He's also the editor of the revised edition of Benjamin Graham's The Intelligent Investor. And he's written a book called Your Money and Your Brain, How the New Science of Neuroeconomics Can Help Make You Rich, although I'm not sure you're really promising that it can help make us rich, but that's, I guess, what book companies like to stick in the subtitles. Some researchers suggest that pigeons and rats, if they knew what the stock market was, might make better investors than humans. Why is that?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is one of the scariest findings to come out of this kind of research. It's pretty humbling once you understand how this works. There's a very simple task you can administer in a laboratory, which is you tell people that, for example, 8 out of 10 times the light that flashes will be red, and 2 out of 10 it'll be green, but that the order is random. And if you administer this task to a rodent or a pigeon, it will quickly learn to pick red all the time, but the human will insist on trying to pick green 20% of the time and will score much lower on this kind of task than a bird or a rodent. And
that's because we're looking for patterns?
The people will believe something like, well, so there's 3 reds and then there's a green, and after that there's 2 reds and 2 greens, and then there's 5 reds and no greens, and they're constantly trying to pick when the next green one will come. The pigeon just says, well, I get fed when I pick red, so I'm just going to pick red all the time.
But that's because humans have this desire to see patterns in everything. It's like those people who see Elvis's profile in a grilled cheese sandwich.
That's correct. And in fact, Carl Sagan, many years ago, came up with the wonderful idea of applying a Greek term to this, which is pareidolia, which is the perception that pattern exists in totally random phenomena. And that drives probably 90% of the investing behavior we see in the markets.
What role does the amygdala play in making those decisions?
The amygdala is a center in the brain that's responsible for generating some of our hottest emotions, like anger and fear, and also has some role in lust.
Panic as well?
Panic.
Because I know sometimes when a stock price appears red on a computer screen with an arrow pointing downward, there are people who go into serious panic. It's not just, oh my gosh.
It's a very powerful response. And one of the things that people need to realize is not just how powerful it is, not just how instantaneous it is. I mean, this sort of response happens in barely over a tenth of a second. It's about the third of the time it takes you to blink your eye. It can be set off by sounds like the closing bell of the stock exchange. It can be set off by moving humans, like people waving their arms and screaming on the floor of the exchange. And it triggers a physiological response in you that you need to guard against. And that's one of the things I talk about in the book, how you can combat that panic response.
Is dopamine part of that physiological response?
Dopamine is a neurotransmitter. It's a chemical inherent in the human brain.
You feel a rush.
That gives you a rush in response to particularly a positive surprise. You made money when you weren't expecting to. And this sets up a pattern in the brain that I call the prediction addiction. When people guess right about an investment repeatedly and get rewarded for it, as you will in the stock market, what gives them the next rush is not being right, but actually predicting that they will. And this explains so much of the increasing risk on the upside when the market rises. What's really happening, and what we saw in July, for example, when the Dow hit 14,000 and supposedly was on the way to 15, is people felt they knew what was coming. And the expectation of the upside is actually more pleasurable to the brain than the experience of it.
But even economists can't make these predictions, and they're supposedly rational analysts of mm-hmm. all of the various factors.
Right.
Now, a drug addict often needs larger fixes for the same kick over time. Does the same process apply with investors? Does it lead them to take larger and larger risks?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons that bull markets sort of die in an orgy and bear markets bounce back with a bang is because you get this escalating cycle of emotion at the peaks and the troughs of the market. And that's driven by the internal chemistry of your brain. And the only way you can combat that is with some of the tools for planning in advance, the policies and procedures, some of which I lay out in the book. If you rely on self-control to combat your own behavior, your goose is cooked. It's not going to happen.
Well, I always thought self-control was a bad idea. What is the mere exposure effect, which was first discovered by the psychologist Robert Zients?
Mere exposure is a fascinating phenomenon that Robert Zients of Stanford University first documented 30 or 40 years ago. And what he found is that merely being exposed to stimuli, almost anything. For example, he took American students who could not read Turkish and could not recognize Chinese characters and exposed them to words in Turkish or Chinese ideographs. And in many cases, he exposed them to these things for fractions of a second, faster than the human eye can consciously perceive, a flash in the dark that might have lasted a hundredth of a second. So all people knew was that they had seen a burst of light. They had no idea what it was. But later, when Zients investigated their preferences, he found that people strongly favored whatever they had seen more frequently, even if they didn't even know that they had ever seen it. And this sort of effect helps explain some of the big puzzles in investing. For example, why do people who know better invest all their money in their own company stock Why do people who work at Enron, for example, put 80 or 90% of their retirement money in the company, and why won't they take it out even when it becomes obvious that the company is going down the drain?
What is a hindsight bias, and what did Richard Nixon's visit to China in 1972 teach us about that?
Hindsight bias is an amazing phenomenon, and the simplest way to think about it is that once something is inscribed on your memory in pencil, it becomes as hard to erase as if it had been written in indelible ink. These wonderful experiments were done at the Hebrew University in the early 1970s. Psychologists asked undergraduates to predict how successful Richard Nixon's trip to China and Russia would be before he went. And of course, before he went, no one knew that what then became known as détente would succeed. In fact, all the experts said it was likely to fail. After the fact, once it became obvious that Nixon's trip was a success, people were asked to recall what their predictions had been. And they all said, I predicted it would succeed. And so what happens in the financial markets is investors come to believe that they knew what was going to happen all along. And for example, in August of this year, when the Dow dropped 10% or more in a matter of days, people told themselves, you know, I knew this was going to happen.
But and then they kicked themselves for not having acted soon enough.
Correct.
Because they knew it.
Exactly. And the way you have to combat this is by keeping very careful records of your forecasts so that what I call your inner con man cannot drag you all over the map. The only way you can learn from your own mistakes is to recognize when you've made them. And hindsight bias tends to prevent you from doing that.
So are neuroeconomists doing better at the market than others? Have Warren Buffett and George Soros taken a course?
I don't think Warren Buffett, and probably not George Soros, actually need to take a course. I think most neuroeconomists would tell us that they're not any better at investing than other people. Some might even tell us they're worse. I think the central lesson from this new science is that you can apply it not so much as a mirror, not so much as a window onto the world, but as a mirror. You can't really use it to look out onto the world around you and say, look at all those stupid people making mistakes. I'm going to trade with them and rob them blind. But you can use it as a mirror to identify your own mistakes and do better.
And also, if you're one of those people who is up at 3 o'clock in the morning at your computer trying to make a couple of extra bucks, this might tell you go to sleep?
It absolutely would tell you go to sleep. One of the central lessons to emerge from this kind of research is the worst thing you can do is obsess over your portfolio, check its value 10 times a minute. The single best thing most investors could do to improve the performance of their portfolio is probably stop trying to improve the performance, relax, form a long-term plan, make a policy, and implement procedures that will keep them from making constant decisions.
Jason Zweig is the former mutual funds editor at Forbes, now a senior writer for Money Magazine, and also the editor of the revised edition of Benjamin Graham's The Intelligent Investor. His latest book, Your Money and Your Brain, published by Simon & Schuster. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a lot of fun.
My pleasure. Thank you, Leonard.